Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell. And we have NFL content to discuss today. NFL season rapidly approaching, and one of the most qualified people, certainly at ESPN, if not on the entire planet.
Wow.
To discuss the National Football League and to discuss the minutiae of the National Football League is the person who does great work for us in the fantasy space, a great football writer in his own right when it comes to the actual stuff, but also fantasy and thinking about, you know, different depth charts, thinking about how the league can be affected by injuries. And that's a discussion we're going to have today, talking about the league's backup quarterbacks. And joining me to do that is ESPN's Mike Clay. Mike, how are you?
I'm good. That's some high praise. I appreciate that. So
Just being honest. I think, like, you know, as someone who writes about fantasy and covers fantasy as closely as you do, I mean, there's so much value when it comes to the fantasy player in terms of monitoring depth charts and knowing, okay, how is the situation going to be impacted by an injury or a change of personnel or a change in coaching staff. And you've written in recent weeks about the slot receivers in the NFL, the third receivers in the NFL. You've written about the handcuffs at running back. And I think in that same space, obviously, the backup quarterbacks around the NFL are important in their own way.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You mentioned minutia. That's definitely what we're getting into here. And sometimes I joke that I could, you know, list off fullbacks and backup nose tackles and all that fun stuff. Because you're right, when you're studying every position, and I do the projections for the site, so I'm looking at punters and returners and every little tiny thing you could think of, offensive fumble return touchdowns, every little category. So when you do that, you do end up having a good feel for even backup quarterback situations. So this is, I enjoy this stuff. I like looking at handcuffs and backups and looking at the upside and what that can mean for a team. If the starter goes down, that should always be factored into things like prognostication for teams.
Right. And I think realistically, we only have to go back 2 years to think about how important it is to have a good backup quarterback. I mean, the Eagles had Nick Foles, and, you know, Nick Foles had struggled as a starter elsewhere, certainly. He had been, you know, that great half season with Chip Kelly, but then lost his job via injury, was traded, was bad with the Rams, I think it's fair to say, was, you know, almost retired, caught on with the Chiefs briefly, and then Eagles backup and, you know, pushed into a role when Carson Wentz got hurt and won them a Super Bowl. So, I mean, it's not something you think about at first. You don't want to ever have to rely on a backup quarterback. There are all these, you know, famous quotes about how basically we're screwed if we have to put our backup quarterback in, but we know now that's not necessarily the case. If you have a good backup quarterback, you might be well positioned to hold on to your spot if you do have a Carson Wentz sort of situation.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I mean, Nick Foles, let's be honest, he's as about as volatile as they come, right? He has his great moments and his bad moments. He's almost never in the middle, but, you know, it levels out, right? He ends up with the ability, kind of like a Ryan Fitzpatrick, to win you games. He might lose you some games, but he's going to win you some games as well. And I think what we're going to look at here is some guys who can hold down the fort in certain systems, other guys that can win you some games. And for the most part, I think what coaches are looking at here is guys that, again, won't lose you too many games. Guys that can just hand the ball off and not throw interceptions. And there are a few of those guys on this list.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's definitely some talent here. Some guys who I think, you know, on different teams might be starters.
Sure. Yeah, no doubt. There's a few of those, but there's a reason they're not starting in most cases. So there's only a few of those, which I'm sure we'll talk about them. But a lot of these guys would probably be cut by a lot of teams too.
Yes, that's also very fair. We'll get to some of the better guys later on in the show, but let's start with the very bottom. Let's go from the worst backup quarterback situation, and then we'll slowly work our way to the best backup quarterback situation. So, Mike, I'll give you the first opportunity here. What is the worst backup quarterback situation in the NFL?
Well, I did cross off some of the rookies here, which we'll get to. So I'm not going to, you know, we don't know. Like some of these guys, like a Ryan Finley could be terrible. We just don't know yet. He could be good. We could be terrible. So looking at guys that have been in the league for at least a year, I start with Dallas, honestly.
Yeah, they're pretty low.
Yeah, I have Cooper Rush and Mike White kind of battling it out. And, you know, I think there's potential here, especially for White, who was a mid-round pick last season. But they have, what, a combined 3 pass attempts in the NFL? you know, Rush was the backup last year and played 6 snaps. He, you know, he was an undrafted player back in 2017. Again, White, 5th rounder last year, didn't play. So for me, that would be, they'd be in trouble. I mean, the Cowboys are a wild card team, in my estimation, have a chance to win the East for sure. But if that goes down, I mean, there's a ton of uncertainty there.
What I find so interesting is that this is a team that knows quite well the impact of having your starting quarterback get injured, and that they were
basically
dead in the water after Tony Romo got hurt in years past. They had, you know, they invested in John Kitna and Kyle Orton, but a team that, by all means, you know, they have the resources financially. They don't need to be cheap. They They have guys to sign, but they have cap space. They could make it work. Didn't target anybody besides Cooper Rush to back up Dak Prescott, a guy who does run very frequently, who doesn't hasn't had a situation where he's looked injured, I believe, so far in his career. But I think absolutely this is a very vulnerable spot for the Cowboys. And I think I had them 29th. I mean, it's not that far off. It's in the same tier. I had the Jaguars 32nd. And I find this to be so shocking to me because with Dak Prescott, maybe you could make the case that, well, you know, he hasn't gotten injured. He looks healthy. He's going to be our guy. You know, I think we're going to be fine. With the Jaguars, who signed Nick Foles this offseason, Nick Foles has been hurt every single season he's played any significant stretch of time in football. I think it's been he has not played more than 10 games in a row without getting hurt. So for the Jaguars to have Tanner Lee and then a rookie in Gardner Minshew backing up Nick Foles, there's a really good chance we're going to see one of those guys start a game in 2019, and that's really scary. It doesn't seem like it's very well planned at all for the Jags.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think that Cody Kessler at some point. They cut him loose, which was kind of surprising for the reasons you just laid out. And they seem to like Minshew a lot. I know a lot of people thought he should be going well before the sixth round of the draft, but this was about my expectations. So I'm with you. It's definitely risky for sure. And they're kind of just throwing darts, right? You have the late rounder Minshew. Lee was a sixth rounder last year, as was Alex Magoo by Seattle. They have him. Well, I think I'm pronouncing that right. He was a seventh rounder. So they're kind of throwing darts at young kids and just hoping one of those guys is decent enough to lock down that number two job. But yeah, I have Minshew there as the favorite for that job. We'll have to see how it plays out.
Who do you have at 31?
31, I have Minnesota, Sean Mannion right now. Again, you know, he was a guy who the Rams drafted in the third round. And they, you know, that was, again, a little bit surprising. But again, he hasn't done much in for the Rams. They cut him loose. He only has 53 career attempts. He's never thrown a touchdown. So that's a team, again, you know, they've invested a lot at in Kirk Cousins, and they're going to need him to stay on the field because it's Mannion, Kyle Sloter's there as well, and Jake Browning's on the roster. That's that's about it right now.
Yeah, I mean, a team that maybe they have cap constraints. They just spent a lot of money elsewhere. You know, you could see them saying, hey, we just need to save money somewhere. Backup quarterback might be the spot, but a team that does have a good chance of competing for a possible Super Bowl if everyone stays healthy. So a little surprised they couldn't convince a backup here or there who, you know, of a slightly higher quality to come take less money to come play there. You know, even if it was going to be someone like a Blake Bortles, who we'll get to a little later, even if he's not obviously an ideal backup, at least it's someone who, you know, has a possible shot at competing for a Super Bowl. So Blake Bortles ended up in Los Angeles. It's not the end of the world necessarily either, but you got the idea. I think there was opportunities there to go after someone who might be a little more exciting than Sean Mannion, who I have in the 26th spot. Again, I think it's basically, once you get down to this bottom tier, it's kind of just, it's just a preference.
Yeah, we're off by three spots on both.
Exactly.
I think we're good, yeah.
I have Tom Savage and David Fales in Detroit 31st.
Okay.
I have not seen any evidence that Tom Savage is a viable NFL quarterback. He is absolutely tall. Nobody can take his height away from him. But a guy who has posted a 72.5 passer rating in 13 games, 315 pass attempts, I think we have a pretty significant amount of evidence that he's a replacement-level quarterback. And I think I'd almost rather have someone like a Sean Mannion, where at least there's a chance he might be productive, where with Tom Savage, I just don't see any reason to think that he's suddenly going to get better.
Yeah, that's fair. I have him a little higher, but it's not a testament to him. It's more of a, you know, a shot at everybody else we're going to talk about here. But you're right. Think about it. We've seen him make a lot of spot starts for Houston, right? He has five career touchdowns and seven interceptions.
With DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, with DeAndre Hopkins, right? A poor yards per attempt, completion percentage, and the tape is obviously not good either.
Right.
So you're right. That's a shaky situation, and I have them in my near the bottom here as well.
Right. Who do you have at 30?
30, I have the Jets and Davis Webb here and Trevor Siemian. And I know Siemian at times has made starts, right? Mm-hmm. But it sounds like he's already lost that job to Webb, or at least he's behind, per recent reports, behind Davis Webb. So it's those two kind of battling for that job. Luke Falk's in the mix as well. But again, just we haven't gotten good play out of Siemian in the NFL, and Webb, we just haven't seen yet. We don't know how good he is. So for me, you know, maybe one of these guys takes a step forward. Maybe Webb's better than we think, and they end up okay if Darnold goes down. But I view this as a very, very shaky spot here for the Jets.
I actually like Siemian more than I think you do. I had them closer to the 12 to 14 range.
Oh, really?
And
okay.
If Simeon doesn't win the job, which it seems like that's certainly possible, that's a big concern. Mm-hmm. But Davis Webb, I don't think we have much evidence saying he's a viable NFL quarterback. We just haven't seen him play yet. And the fact that the Giants give up on him so quickly is not a good sign. If Simeon gets the job, I think he is a, you know, he posted a 79.9 passer rating, with the Jets, or with the Broncos a couple years ago, over 835 pass sample. And I mean, that's not great, but I think the degree of difficulty there was a little bit higher in terms of the offensive line being mediocre, in terms of there not being a really effective running game, when he was the quarterback there, on a consistent basis. And still, I think certainly not a higher upside option, but I think someone with a higher floor than a Tom Savage or the guy I'm going to get to at 30 for Seattle, Paxton Lynch.
Yeah, and just quickly to mm-hmm. put a bow on that one, I mean, if Simeon were maybe if this was a week ago and I still thought he was a two, I would have put him higher. But Since it sounds like he's probably going to get cut that's why I kind of ranked Webb so low. So maybe Simeon's one of those guys who gets cut and ends up replacing one of these other guys we talked about. Maybe he goes to Dallas,
yeah.
Right? That would be a guy who you'd feel a little bit better about than some of these other players.
I think so. Yeah, absolutely. With Paxton Lynch in Seattle at 30, I mean, I can't imagine that moment where I don't want Russell Wilson to get hurt. I want him to stay healthy for as long as possible.
Sure.
But that moment where Russell Wilson, has his ankle stepped on and has to come off, and Paxton Lynch steps on the field, and you have a guy who, I mean, the Broncos basically thought he was a franchise quarterback and had to admit that he was not even a worth a roster spot. A guy who posted a 76.7 passer rating, a 12.3% sack rate, a absolutely statuesque quarterback. Again, extremely tall, and that is a very valuable thing. But just the Seahawks would have to fundamentally not change their offense is the wrong word, but just basically hand the ball off on just about every single snap and go to a total run-based offense with Paxton Lynch as their quarterback. So I'm fond of teams where the backup quarterback can step in and play a similar sort of role to the starter, and I don't think that's the case here with Paxton Lynch. To be fair, I don't know what offense he would fit in.
Yeah, no doubt. They do have Geno Smith as well. Maybe he wins that job, maybe a slightly better fit there, but you're right. It's going to be trouble for Seattle, but fortunately, I mean, you kind of alluded to it, they're already an extremely run-heavy team. That's despite having one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, they've tried to eliminate him from everything but third and long, it seems mm-hmm. like. I don't know what they're trying to hide. It's been very frustrating to watch, but nonetheless, you're right. They are one of those teams that pretty much don't have a chance if Lynch or Smith are in their quarterback.
I think Geno Smith is a little better,
yeah,
but I'm still a little skeptical. Who do you have next?
Next, I am going to Arizona.
Yep.
Brett Hundley is next up on my list. 9 touchdowns, 12 picks in his career, 5.8 yards per attempt. He completed 61% of his passes. This is back in 2017 mm-hmm. when we saw him for 11 games. So really, really disastrous. And again, a lot of hype here for the rookie Kyler Murray. But, he's going to run the ball a lot, it sounds like. And if he goes down, all that hype surrounding the weapons in this offense and mm-hmm. David Johnson, and certainly the coaching staff there with Kingsbury, it's gonna go down pretty quickly. So definitely a problem area here.
Yeah, I think the one thing I would say if I was being optimistic about Brett Hundley is that I don't know that Mike McCarthy was really doing much to make the scheme easier for Brett Hundley in terms mm-hmm. of playing to his strengths.
That's a good point.
I think with what he does with his athleticism, with his college career, I think it might play to his strengths to be in more of an air raid system and have I don't think he was an air raid quarterback at school with Jim Moore. He was not an area quarterback with Jim Moore, but I think just, he is someone who does have athleticism, who can get to the edge, someone who I think you want to sort of make decisions quicker with Brett Hundley. And so I think this offense could theoretically play to his strengths, but we haven't even seen him in it yet. So, I think it's going to be better than the West Coast that Matt McCarthy is running. But again, we don't know what the offense is going to look like until Kyler Murray gets out there in week one, so I think we're still really projecting at this point.
Yeah, it's true, and I think I tweeted something about this a couple of years ago during that 2017 season when Hundley was in there, along the lines of how what you just said is true. There, mm-hmm. Aaron Rodgers kind of feasts on low percentage throws, right? Like he's aiming for the sideline and he's just winging it all over the place, and he's always attacking low percentage spots, but he's so good that he can make them work. At least he could prior to the last couple of years when Hundley stepped in. It was the same thing. Right. He was throwing all, it was the same rates. He was throwing to the sideline, to the numbers a lot. It just did not make any sense. Mm-hmm. And you're right. Maybe that has something to do with these pretty awful numbers. And
yeah, the numbers are bad.
Yeah,
it's really just we're hoping as opposed to expecting. I had the Steelers at 28.
Interesting, really.
I think I'm maybe more pessimistic than most when it comes to Mason Rudolph and Joshua Dobbs, but we haven't really seen them play. Joshua Dobbs threw, he has what, 12 attempts with one interception. Mason Rudolph, I mean, we don't know a lot. He came out of school, hasn't played yet, to my knowledge. Right. You know, so I think there is certainly at the very least a question marks. I mean, we just know very little about these two quarterbacks.
Yeah, you're right. I think I just look at this situation, and again, I'm kind of mid-pack here, so I'm not going nuts by any means, but I was more optimistic about Rudolph coming into last year's draft, so I'm going to see him. I mean, he didn't win that job last year. I want to see him beat out Josh Dobbs, take that two job, and become a stellar number two quarterback. But again, we haven't seen it yet. You're right. It's a major question mark. It will be if something happens to Big Ben, and he's had durability issues, so it could prove to be an issue. But again, as someone optimistic about Rudolph coming out, and you know when he's out in the field, maybe he'll show that, but maybe he'll be a bust. Those efficient. I mean, Nate Peterman. Pretty darn efficient prospect coming into the draft. That has not gone too well. Maybe that's the case with Mason Rudolph, but I think there's at least some upside in this
group here.
For sure,
100%. And I mean, we just don't know. I think if you're optimistic about him coming out of school, you should still be optimistic about him now.
Sure.
We'll be back with more of our NFL discussion with Mike Clay here on the Bill Barnwell Show in a moment. But first, guys, are you tired of credit card bills with high interest rates? Are you ready to pay off your credit card balances and start saving money? Well, get a credit card consolidation loan from LightStream with rates as low as 5.95% APR with autopay. You can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000 with no fees. There's no application fees, no origination fees, no transaction fees, and no prepayment penalties. Plus, you can even get your money in your bank account as soon as the day you apply. You can't beat that. The online application is so easy. You can apply right from your phone. And LightStream believes that people with good credit deserve a better loan experience, and that's exactly what they deliver. And just for my listeners, you can apply now to get a special interest rate discount. And the only way to get that discount is to go to lightstream.com/Barnwell, LightStream.com/Barnwell, my last name, Barnwell. Offer is subject to credit approval. Rate includes a 0.5% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit LightStream.com/Barnwell for more information. Now back to the show. Who do you have next?
Next for me would be good old AJ McCarron.
Yes.
In Houston. Think about all the talk. I mean, have we ever seen a guy with 17 pass attempts over three seasons get so much media attention? I mean, wow, man, a lot of hype the past few years. 8 of 17, 74 yards. That's it. That's all he's done over the past 3 years. He's been bouncing around the league. He's in Houston now. And, I think it's safe to say it's going to be a problem if something happens to Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, I know there was optimism about McCarron coming out of that stretch in 2015 with the Bengals where he took over for Andy Dalton. It's worth remembering, that was an offense where Andy Dalton was having a career year. There was a ton of talent on that team at the skill positions. Their offensive line was healthy and very effective. Hugh Jackson was doing well as the offensive coordinator. It was a very, it was actually a pretty exciting offense in a lot of ways. And so AJ McCarron was playing a very easy stretch of defenses, I believe, at that point of the season. And we saw what happened in the Steelers game. The Bengals defense knocked out Antonio Brown late. They injured Ben Roethlisberger, and they really couldn't do enough on offense to win that game until the very final bits of the game, at which point the Steelers did then come back and beat the Bengals. That's just their birthright, it seems like. Again, someone who was tall, successful in college, those are both good things, I guess, but a guy who I think the league has evaluated him and found him to be pretty wanting outside of Hugh Jackson, who, of course, tried to trade 2 mid-round picks for him a couple of years ago. And Hugh Jackson currently, if I'm not mistaken, does not have a job in the National Football League. So unless he gains control somewhere, you'd figure AJ McCarron's going to be on the fringes of the league for another year.
No doubt.
In terms of my next pick, you mentioned Nathan Peterman. I'm going to head to Oakland, where we have two similar quarterbacks, although I feel like it's mean to Mike Glennon, and Mike Glennon and Nathan Peterman, two people who I think fit the idea of what a quarterback might look like when it comes to the traditional NFL model. Two guys who have not been especially good at football. Mike Glennon, I think someone who was okay in Tampa. Certainly, I think his upside was stated overstated based on how he played in Tampa in 2013 and 2014. We saw Chicago give up on him pretty quickly in 2017. Granted, they had Mitchell Trubisky in the wings. But I think a quarterback who, certainly when you compare him to Nathan Peterman has some upside, but a guy who has been, really a checkdown quarterback, only averaging 6.5 yards per attempt as a pro. So I'm not optimistic that he would be very effective in John Gruden's offense given a lengthy stretch of time as a starter.
Yeah, interesting. I split these guys into three tiers. Again, sans rookies, and he's a top of my second tier.
So wow.
I definitely like him a little more. That would put him around 10th in the rankings. 172 attempts over the past four seasons, completing almost 70% of his passes. Five interceptions during that span. Mm-hmm. Six touchdowns. Nothing special by any means, but he kind of fits that mold of a guy who can sort of not totally crush you, right? Mm-hmm. If you can complete 70% of your passes, and again, that's you wouldn't project him that high, but at least he's doing that. He's doing something effectively. He's not going to add much with his legs. We know that, but I think if he could just come out, avoid turnovers and complete passes, he could kind of hold down the fort. And they revamped that offense big time out there in Oakland. So I don't think, it's a relative term based on what we're talking about, but I don't think he's going to completely kill you like some of these other guys will. So again, I'm a little more optimistic if Glennon locks down that two job.
I think that's fair. I would be concerned about fumbles to some extent. He did fumble five times in those four games with the Bears. Mm-hmm. But I think he's someone who, we've seen him at least win a few games, not a lot, but a few games at the NFL level. So I'd rather have him than certainly anybody else who, we've talked about before this point, but I could see why you'd have him higher. I'll certainly grant you that. Do you think Nathan Peterman will ever throw another NFL pass?
I don't. I think he'll be cut by Oakland and that'll be it. And again, I hate to say it because again, he was a guy that coming in,
right.
I thought he was super efficient. I thought coming out of Pitt, he had a shot and I was excited to see him out there, but he was in a bad situation to start and he just couldn't do it.
He just
could not play in the NFL. It was disappointing.
You don't typically see guys who are overmatched like that get that much of a chance. And he deserved the opportunity. I think he deserved a chance, but it was clear that either in the Bills game against the Chargers, playing a very good defense or that game last year to start the season, it just was not up to the task realistically. Who do you have next, Mike?
Next for me, I'm going to Buffalo. Yep. Matt Barkley. 10 touchdowns, 18 interceptions in his career, almost 300 attempts. Just hasn't been up to the task, right? There was a little hype there in Philadelphia. Yep. Never was effective there either, and he just hasn't panned out. So I think I know he showed just enough for them to kind of bring him back as their backup to mm-hmm. Josh Allen. But again, and they're a run heavy team. They want to lean on the defense, so maybe he's not going to be as exposed as some other guys would be if put in a position of maybe a team with a bad defense or a pass-first offense, but nonetheless, I think he's going to lose more games than he's going to win for sure.
Yeah, I know there was a game where he had a ton of drops. I don't remember which one it was. I want to say maybe they were playing Detroit when he's on the Bears. There was a three-game stretch where he looked pretty good, and then afterwards he threw 10 interceptions over the next three games, which is, mm-hmm. That's as far as like definition of like killing your team and preventing them from really winning, mm-hmm. that is about exactly where you go. 10 interceptions, 2 fumbles, over a three-game stretch, that's going to be pretty hard to overcome. I had Ryan Finley and Jeff Driscoll of Cincinnati, mm-hmm. where, again, it depends on how much you want to project the rookie into the situation here. I know people are certainly high on Ryan Finley as far as fourth-round picks go. I feel like I'm not qualified to say at this point. Jeff Driscoll, I think, was in a difficult situation when he came in for Andy Dalton last year. I think we saw some athleticism. I think that was the best thing we saw from him, but we saw pretty much replacement level passing, an 82.2 passer rating, six touchdowns, 2 picks, only 5.7 yards per attempt though, which I think suggests that you're looking at a very sort of low risk, low reward passing attack from a team that was missing AJ Green at that point, that was having offensive line issues, and Jeff Driscoll was kind of not placed in a position where they asked him to do very much, and he, kind of lived down to expectations.
Yeah, no doubt. And Driscoll, another guy I liked as a sleeper coming out, right? He had kind of a bizarre career with some time at, he was at Florida and Louisiana Tech, if I remember correctly. And he could probably, and we've seen this already because he's already gotten a little playing time. he can add a little value with his legs,
yep.
and maybe that could win them a game, but he's not very good throwing the football, and he's going to turn the ball over, so that's a problem. So I think Cincinnati's probably hoping Finley comes in polished and wins that job. I mean, he's going to turn 25 this year, so he's mm-hmm. you know, he's been around a while at NC State, and I don't think he's a terribly dissimilar quarterback to Andy Dalton, right? He's probably going to stand in the pocket. It's a little with his legs. I think Derek Carr is probably a good comp for him. He's an accurate quarterback, not mm-hmm. a big arm, so we'll see. There's hope for him, but he's probably going to be a career backup, and that's fine. I mean, right. if he can be a decent backup here for Cincinnati and again, not crush them if Dalton goes down, which has mm-hmm. been a problem, that'll be fine. So I'm a little optimistic, but yeah, I think you're probably right to put him around mid-range.
Mm-hmm. Who do you have next?
I'm going to Tampa. Ryan Griffin, Blaine Gabbert here. Obviously, Gabbert, not the answer for anybody as a starter. I mean, maybe he can not lock down the number two job.
Yep.
Ryan Griffin, I know they like him a lot down there. This is Ryan Griffin, the quarterback, not the tight end, of
yes.
course. And he does not have much experience, but they do like him. I think he's probably the favorite for that job. And that can be important because Jameis Winston still has more interceptions than he has games started in the NFL. He was benched last year. He was suspended. He mm-hmm. was injured. I mean, there's a lot going on there. So, you know, maybe these guys will see the field, and I think it's important for them to have a solid presence there in the two slot.
Yeah, I mean, this is not an offense with Bruce Arians that does a great job typically of protecting the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a reasonable track record of guys in this offense either getting hurt or getting banged up. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of plays where you're throwing deep, you need time for those routes to develop. There's going to be some development time for Jameis Winston. He's a guy who, like you said, has not necessarily been the most consistent player, who has had a way of you know, missing opportunities, whether it be by suspension or by injury or by poor play. So I mean, it wouldn't shock me if we saw some of Ryan Griffin or Blaine Gabbert this year. And I think Blaine Gabbert is that guy who, you know, we're seeing this with Bortles to some extent as well. NFL teams just don't want to give up on these guys who are taken really highly, who are great athletes. Mm-hmm.
Pedigree.
You always, yeah, exactly. You always want to think you can mold them into something, but we saw in that Colts-Titans game in Week 17 last year where Tennessee needed a good game from Blaine Gabbert to win that division and win a playoff spot, a wild card spot, and he just didn't have it in him. I don't think you can rely on Blaine Gabbert to be an effective quarterback for weeks on end. It just has not been the case for his entire career, and I think we've seen enough of him at this point to say pretty confidently that he is, you know, absolutely a last gasp, totally desperate, you know, emergency option, not much more.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Believe it or not, he's pushing for 10,000 yards. Like, he's almost at 10,000 passing yards in the NFL.
That blows
That's
my mind.
Unbelievable. 48 touchdowns, 47 interceptions, 631 rushing yards, too. I mean, he's been out in the field a lot, and it obviously has not worked out for pretty much anyone. So, yeah, it's kind of insane he's still around. And I mean, man, he's attempted at least, I'm like looking at this now, he's attempted at least 100 passes in 6 of his 8 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
That's incredible. He's just been at the right place at the right time, I guess.
Yeah. In terms of who I have next, I have Denver here. So it's either going to be Drew Lock, who you figure would be the backup, or Kevin Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
You figure Drew Lock is going to be groomed as a starter. I don't know that he's going to play in 2019, you'd figure that if something did happen to Joe Flacco, they would turn to Locke as opposed to Hogan or Brett Rypien, who was also on the roster. I mean, do you think that this is a situation where the Broncos are desperate to make that move, or are they trying to be as slow as possible, you think?
I think they want Joe Flacco to play every game and take him to the playoffs this year. I think that's what they want. I think reality is they're going to struggle. You have two really good teams in your division, mm-hmm. and you're going to be most likely battling with Oakland for the 3 spot, and you're going to be trying to hang on for a wild card spot and probably fall short. So I fully expect, much like, you know, we're going to talk about the Giants in a little bit, probably, mm-hmm. you know, certainly Washington, you're going to see Locke make some starts in the final month of the season at least, and maybe earlier if they start slow, because, listen, I don't think this is a hot take at this point. It was years ago, but Joe Flacco's not good. I mean, he's just not. He's a pedestrian. He's a starter, sure, but a bottom-end starter in the NFL. He does not move the needle, adds nothing with his legs. You know, Locke is ideally the future, and if I'm Denver, I'm thinking about 2020 and beyond. I would mm-hmm. want to get him some playing time this season, see how good he is, see if he's the answer. Because, you know, especially if they go 5-11 and they pick early, you need to know if you need to go after one of these super hyped up quarterbacks in the mm-hmm. 2020 draft, or if Locke is a guy you can count on, because you're going to kick yourself If he doesn't play, you don't draft a quarterback, and you go into 2020 with him as your starter, and it's a disaster. So I do expect him to play for about a month late in the season.
All right, let's get to the rest of the list here after the break on the Bill Barnwell Show. All right, back here on the Bill Barnwell Show, I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN, joined by my pal Mike Clay. We are talking about the backup quarterback situations around the NFL. We are somewhere in the 20s. I think I've lost count of where we are.
we're almost halfway. Next tomorrow we'll be halfway.
Yes. Right? In terms of the discussion.
You know, I got the numbers, Bill.
You're the expert.
I got tabs on the numbers here.
You're the math expert here. I am a poser. In this
that
space
is not
here.
True. That is not true. No. But I think I'm up though, right?
Yes.
So the next guy on my list. This is the last guy I have in the bottom tier.
Okay.
And it is Drew Stanton. So,
yes.
Of Cleveland. So obviously that for now is the Baker Mayfield backup plan. And Stanton just hasn't been good. 52% career completion percentage, 6.1 yards per attempt, 19 touchdowns, 24 interceptions. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'm talking myself into putting him lower, but I gave him a little nudge for experience, right? He's been around. I guess that helps a little over some of these guys. But, you know, when he's played, it has not been good, you know, especially during his time in Arizona. So, again, bad news for Cleveland if Baker misses time.
Well, I don't know if you remember, third string quarterback there is AAF legend Garrett Gilbert.
That's true.
One of the more impressive quarterbacks.
Yeah, he could win that job. Yeah.
I mean, it wouldn't shock me. Like, I don't think.
No.
Drew Stanton is certainly the more experienced option, like you said, but it wouldn't be the craziest thing in the world to think that he could have an opportunity there. And I mean, I want Baker Mayfield to stay healthy, but stranger things have happened.
Yeah, no doubt. And Gilbert, he got a little run for Carolina late last season, right?
Yep.
It was just a little bit and looked okay. So you're right. He could definitely win that job. And Stanton's 35, so it would be nice if they could get the younger guy, Gilbert, to win that job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he threw 3 passes for the Panthers last year.
Oh, that's it.
Okay. But, hey, you know, 40 yards on 3 passes.
There you go. That's what I'm remembering, I guess. 13th. He made, you know, make your chances count.
I actually have Carolina next year. Where it's Taylor Heinicke, who started the game for them last year when they were sort of falling apart with injuries at quarterback. Will Greer, you'd figure, would be in the running as far as quarterbacks go. If Cam Newton misses time, which is, you know, certainly is, there's a reasonable concern there about his shoulder and about his health in general. I would figure they'd go to Will Greer, who we don't know much about, someone who had plenty of success in college, might have to adjust to the pro game and certainly to what the Panthers do on offense, but Taylor Heinicke did not do well in his spot start a year ago.
Yeah, I think they're hoping Greer's the real deal and wins this job.
Right.
But it's kind of interesting. I mean, Greer was an effective player at West Virginia, some kind of point to the system there. But, you know, I'm not sure he's a fit for their current offense, right? He's not really conservative. He, you know, his arm strength is somewhat concerning, but, you know, he had a lot of production deep downfield, more of a gunslinger. And that's not really what they're looking for right now. They've adjusted Cam Newton to a very conservative thrower. He set career marks in off-target rate and the lowest average depth of throw of his career. Completion percentage was a career high, and it worked. I mean, they're trying to get the ball to Curtis Samuel, DJ Moore, Christian McCaffrey, Jarius Wright even in the short area. Greg Olsen's back. They're not looking to shoot it deep and turn the ball over. They want to be conservative, and again, it worked for them last season. Believe it or not, through week 14, they had scored 2 or more offensive touchdowns in every single game.
Wow.
So, kind of interesting changes that the Carolina offense has made. But again, you know, if he beats out Heinicke and wins the job, I think Carolina's happy.
Yeah, I mean, that's incredible considering that Christian McCaffrey was barred from entering the end zone for the first 6 weeks of the year.
Yeah, no doubt. But Cam's a tricky one, right? Like,
yes.
I know he shows up poorly, and this is probably a separate full podcast, but I know he shows poorly in QBR, but he's just such a unique animal. What he brings to the table with his legs, maybe not as valuable as doing damage on those plays with your arm, but he's still so good. It's a hard guy to measure, I think, in terms of efficiency.
He's very, very unique, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very difficult to compare him to anyone else in the NFL when it comes to what he does and what he offers.
Sure.
Who do you have next?
Next up, we're at the bottom of tier 2 here. Chad Henne, Kansas City. Again, this one's kind of the fact that we haven't seen him in a long time, right?
Yeah.
He got some run as a starter, didn't pan out, and he's hung around as a backup, but he only has 5 pass attempts over the past 4 seasons. So if Patrick Mahomes goes down, maybe Andy Reid can coach up Henne, and you know, he's obviously very creative offensively and a good fit with Mahomes. Maybe he can make Henne competent.
Mm-hmm.
But again, this is a team that has a bad defense. So, you know, you take away Mahomes, what does it mean for their win total? Probably a lot. It probably is a pretty significant impact on that number. So for me, Henne, it's a bit of a problem area.
Yeah, I think that he would, you know, Reid would do a decent job coaching him up. But that's not really what we're talking about here. We're not talking about, you know, how would they do with the current coach they have, but more just in a vacuum, how should each team feel about their options? Because
sure.
Andy Reid could coach, I don't want to say me, maybe you. I think you have the ability to pull it off. But, like, you know, could take an NFL-caliber quarterback and make them look a lot better just because he's a really fantastic guy at his job. I'm maybe a little more optimistic on Henny. I mean, obviously, he's played in some pretty rough offenses, and he deserves, I think, some of the blame for that after throwing nearly 2,000 passes at the NFL level. But I think a guy who, you know, those Jaguars offenses pre-Blake Bortles, not especially laden with talent. The Dolphins offenses he took over in 2009 and 2010 under Tony Sperano. I mean, you know, run-based offenses, they didn't ask him to do very much. And to be fair, he did not do very much either. But there was a year where his first year as a starter, his receiving core, and just to bring up some names from the past, Devon Bess, Greg Camarillo, Brian Hartline, Ted Ginn, who was 24, still young then. Before
there's some legends on this list. Love it.
Yeah, Anthony Fasano. Lusaka Polite was in at fullback. You know, just that's not exactly the most exciting receiving core. So I'm maybe a little more optimistic than you are, but I think he's still like a 14-15 middle of the pack guy.
Yeah, I hear you. Just, you know, just one of them guys. More interceptions than touchdowns, under 60% completion percentage, 6.6 yards per attempt. I mean, like you said, there's been a lot of volume. And by the way, he hasn't played the last four
years.
I
think that's a really good point. And that he, you know, it's not as if he's getting better.
Yeah. that's true. He's 34 now, right?
Yes. Speaking of quarterbacks who are not getting better as they advance in age, I would go with Matt Shaw of the Atlanta Falcons, where, I mean, it was that season with the Texans where he was throwing pick sixes seemingly every single week. That was 2013. That was 6 years ago now. And since then, I mean, he's thrown 100 passes and thrown six picks on those 100 passes, a 66 passer rating over that time frame. And a guy who really has not played, outside of two games with the Ravens, has not played very much at all in the past 5 years. And if Matt Ryan were to get injured, that would be a really scary situation for anyone who, you know, owned Julio Jones or Calvin Ridley in fantasy football.
Yeah, when I was in college, which it's been a while now, when I was in college, Matt Schaub and Michael Vick were on the same roster in Atlanta. I mean, that was a pretty good duo back then. It was like, wow, how are you that good at the quarterback position? So Schaub, of course, now back with Atlanta. You're right, 100 pass attempts over the past five seasons. He's now 38. It's obviously not going to be good. I mean, he's one of them guys that's obviously a seasoned veteran, a ton of experience. Maybe he could at least, again, maybe he could avoid turnovers. I don't know. Like you said, he has that history of pick sixes. Maybe he could hold down the fort for this team, which is pretty talented. But you're right. It's hard to count on this guy at his age and considering how little he's played in recent history.
Yeah, and the number three is Kurt Benkert, who we know very little about.
Right.
Who's next for you?
I'm going to go to the Eagles here. Nate Sudfeld, Philadelphia. You know, I think he's at least the favorite for that two job. Their reports have been kind of conflicted, but they snagged him from the Redskins a few years ago, and they love him. I mean, they've talked a lot about how much they like him. They felt confident moving on from Nick Foles because they had him waiting in the wings. He's been kind of working between those two guys or behind those two guys, Wentz and Foles, over the past couple of years. We did see him a little bit last season. He got some run and completed 83% of his passes, but was just dumping it off. His average depth of throw was under four. So that's all we've seen from him so far. Just, you know, a kind of a dump off expert. But again, that's a small sample. We don't know for sure, but I think there's enough excitement there to rank him around mid pack. And again, you know, I know we're just talking about it in a vacuum, the player, but you know, they have a great offensive line, good weapons there. Maybe if he settles in there, he looks better than he actually is. Maybe he's competent enough to hold down the fort for this
team. Yeah, and I think this is a place where the Eagles are vulnerable. Maybe the only vulnerability they have on this roster outside of maybe, you know, maybe in the secondary, maybe a cornerback, is going to be at the backup quarterback spot where they were not able to keep Nick Foles. Not surprising. They, you know, talked about franchising him, but it was never really going to happen. And they, you know, they might need Nate Sudfeld this year. Hardly out of the question that they would actually use him given how frequently Carson Wentz has been injured as a pro. So hopefully you don't need him, and hopefully he looks great when if you do need to turn to him. But you know, it's either going to be him, or if they're in pick Clayton Thorson or Cody Kessler, who caught on there and who seems to be on the outside, at least at this point, in terms of winning that of winning a roster spot. So yeah, I think Nate Sudfeld could be a very meaningful player in this NFL season if we see what we've seen in years past.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And you're right. I kind of like what they did behind these guys, bringing in a late round rookie Thorson and then adding kind of an emergency veteran in Kessler just to compete here, right? And keep Sudfeld on it. So we'll see how that pans out again. It could be, there's a low ceiling. Or I mean, mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I don't want to say a low ceiling. As backups go, maybe there's a high ceiling, but sure. There's certainly a low floor as well.
Yeah, I think the fact that it's such a good infrastructure there makes the ceiling higher than it, or the floor higher than it would be for mm-hmm. most teams.
You know that.
Next, I have DeShone Kizer.
So do I. Perfect.
Tremendous. We finally found one.
Finally.
I mean, Kizer's such an interesting character because it's hard to judge him strictly based on the numbers because he was so bad his first year in Cleveland, but he was a 21-year-old quarterback playing under Hugh Jackson who seemed to be starting him out of spite for stretches of time, like, or they just ended up benching him without any rhyme or reason, and then starting him because they got criticized for benching him. It just, I don't know that I can judge anybody from that Browns season with any sort of credibility. I mean, last year he played through 42 passes for the Packers. Almost a good chunk of that was against the Bears, if I'm not mistaken. Not a good chunk, but at least part of it was against the Bears in week one, where they were forced to go for Aaron Rodgers. The rest of it came in week 17 against the Lions, and a team that had, you know, basically nothing to play for, given up for the year, was not good, but... again, I still think that it's just so hard to judge him based on what he's, you know, based on the situations he's been in so far.
Yeah, that's totally fair. Still very young. You're right. Atrocious in pretty much any category you could find in 2017. But he did, other than rushing. I mean, he was effective.
Yes.
He did run a lot, add some value there. But you're right. He's just still one of them young developing quarterbacks. And if he steps in there, maybe they develop and he takes a step forward in his third season. So, at least there's some upside. And sometimes that's just what you're looking for with these guys.
Right. Who do you have next?
Next for me, I'm going to Washington. And I actually have Colt McCoy here because again, I kind of put rookies on their own,
right.
But I guess ideally they would be higher if Haskins is the backup, obviously a first round pick from them. So, the favorite, Case Keenum, to start. You have McCoy and Haskins kind of battling there as well. But if it's McCoy, again, kind of mid-pack, 29 touchdowns, 33 picks in his career. He's only thrown 65 passes over the past four seasons. Mm-hmm. They're talking about him as maybe a guy that can win the starting job there. Gruden seems to like him a lot. But again, we're around mid-pack now. So it's kind of an average situation.
Right. I think if it was Keenum, I have it as sort of a mix of Keenum and McCoy. Mm-hmm. I have them much higher because I think Keenum is just, you know, the fact that he had that one great year. That's something I don't think a lot of the guys on this list could have given the opportunity.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, Keenum, he feels like a backup. Like, you almost want to include him on this list because he feels like he should be a backup.
Exactly.
And he would be higher. He would be a high backup quarterback. But for now, it looks like he's going to probably be the favorite to start week one. So for me, I'm looking at McCoy and Haskins
Makes
to battle
sense.
For that job.
Yeah, absolutely. Next on my list, I had Robert Griffin.
So do I.
Where it's, you know, you want to look at that rookie season and you want to count it as something that he still might have in his arsenal somewhere. I think certainly this would be the offense that would play to his strengths more than any offense he's played in since that rookie season. But this is a guy who he was fine in 2013, and I think he was worse than the numbers in 2014. He was really bad with the Cleveland Browns in 2016 as a short-term starter. I mean, a guy who just gets sacked very frequently. I think a sack rate over 10%, if I'm not mistaken, over the last 4 years. 10.2%, since that rookie season. So, guy who's going to take a lot of hits, a guy who's had durability issues, a player who has not looked the same since his knee injury, which is a bummer. But I think at this point, you know, given that we've seen over about 700 pass attempts from him since the knee injury he suffered as a rookie, just has not been the same guy. So unless I would love to be surprised. I'd love to see him play well. I think there's a good chance that he's going to have to start with Lamar Jackson playing in this run-heavy offense. Just tough to see anyone making it 16 games in that offense, but someone who I'm not super optimistic about.
Yeah, I'm with you. His last extended action was way back in 2016. I mean, he was out of the league at times. He worked here for a while at ESPN, so he's kind of bounced around, and we just haven't seen him get consistent playing time in the league. So definitely going to be a problem if Jackson goes down. And you're right, that's what I was thinking about, too, is... Jackson certainly has to be one of the quarterbacks most likely to get injured based on the way they play him. So this could definitely be a problem. But on the other hand, I mean, if you look at your backup quarterback options outside of drafting another one during the offseason, Griffin's probably about as good as you can get. A lot of these other guys we're going to talk about were already on rosters or just were not available. There's a few exceptions, but you're right, barring a trade for like a, again, we'll talk about him in a minute, but Jacoby Brissett, barring doing that and Indy wasn't going to let him go cheap, I mean, this is about as good as they could have done, I think.
Yeah, and I think not only that, but also playing a quarterback who fits into your scheme. Like, maybe they could have got, you know, a Blake Bortles. Like, I don't think realistically Blake Bortles is going to play in this game anyway. I thought they should have got Tyrod Taylor. That seemed like a natural fit to me, given that Greg Roman had had success with Tyrod Taylor in Buffalo. But as we'll talk about, Tyrod Taylor headed elsewhere.
Yeah, no doubt. And do you want to talk about him next?
Sure, why not?
All right, let's go. He's a little bit, he's in my first tier.
Yep, me too.
You know, so he is, he's been a competent starter for sure. I talked about him a lot last offseason because I was optimistic about the Browns. So, and that was not a popular opinion. So I had to kind of do the rounds. But, you know, the key with Taylor is, and again, we saw this with Cleveland. Say what you want about his inefficiency throwing the ball last season, is his inability to make big plays at times. He kept them in games. They should have beat the Saints in New Orleans. I mean, they were competitive early on while he was a starter, despite his problems. But he doesn't turn the ball over, and that is such an underrated asset in the NFL. I mean, you look back at his 62 games in the league, 69 total touchdowns, 20 interceptions. He adds a lot of value with his legs, we know. So, again, he's kind of an odd fit for the Chargers offense, for sure.
Yes.
I mean, a very suspicious signing there, but at the same time, this is a very good Chargers team. So, if they, again, they just... tell them, scramble all you want. Get the ball to Keenan Allen and Hunter Henry and Mike Williams. Don't turn the ball over. You're good at that. You know, maybe we can continue to compete here. So, again, as backups go, he's a good one.
Yeah, I think his skill set is really hard to appreciate. I don't think it was a great fit in Cleveland, but given that, you know, we saw Baker Mayfield take a big leap forward after Hugh Jackson left, I'm inclined to attribute some of that to Hugh Jackson as opposed to Tyrod Taylor. I think he is an upper echelon, you know, top-tier backup, in my opinion. And certainly I think, you know, the Chargers don't typically need a backup for Phillip Rivers. The guy barely plays. It's a weird fit scheme wise, but I think absolutely, I think he is a, you know, one of the better options you could have, independent of scheme or independent of concept. We'll be back with more of our NFL discussion with Mike Clay here on the Bill Barnwell Show in a moment. But first,
guys, hiring used to be hard. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy, and you only have to go to one place to get it done. It's ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell, my last name, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L, because if you use ZipRecruiter at ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell, they're going to send your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, and they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. And ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. That is 80%. If you're not good at math, 4 divided by 5 is 80%. That is a very, very good percentage. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L, ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Now back to the show.
I'm going to go with Daniel Jones here.
And okay, I know that, we're in the top 10 now. This is 9, yeah, I think. Yeah,
we're getting right over there. I don't know that it's, you know, if it's not Daniel Jones, then it could be Eli Manning, theoretically. It could be Alex Tanny, a fourth-round pick, Kyle Laletta from a year ago. Eric Dungy's on the roster. I think that combination of backups could be better than the starter. We could be in one of the spots where, you know, Daniel Jones could be better than Eli Manning at this point. And I know that you're not considering rookies. I think this is his spot where we will see a change happen during the season. I think it'll be Eli Manning in week one. I feel much, much strong. Well, I feel significantly that it's more likely to be Daniel Jones by week 9, if not necessarily even week 17.
Yeah, and we actually just did the Giants prop bets on the Daily Wager, and for me, I had Eli projected at 13 games or 13 starts for the season. So that's my kind of line. If I had to make a line, that would mean Jones will probably get some run late in the season when the Giants fall out of the race there in the NFC. But you know, as backups go, I think this is fair. I think he should be in the top 10. Assuming he wins that job.
Right.
We're not sure what he's going to bring to the table as a passer, especially out of the gate. You would expect him to be conservative, but he's kind of sneaky good as a runner, right? Or maybe sneaky good's the wrong way to put it, but he can add some value with his legs. We saw Josh Allen really struggle as a passer as a rookie, but do some damage with his legs and kind of overcame that. So that's something to keep an eye on. Maybe he can add value that way if he makes some starts this season, or, you know, assuming Eli goes down or is benched, that that he can do that.
Yeah, it wasn't like Josh Allen had a reputation as being like, you know, this Lamar Jackson-esque scrambling quarterback coming out of school. And he was what? Was he the fantasy football quarterback one over a final?
Over the final month. Yeah, I think the last 4 weeks.
Right,
yeah.
Which is, that's pretty impressive. I mean, like, that's legit performance. So, yeah, absolutely. I think he could figure.
The last guy in my second tier is Chase Daniel for Chicago. Yep. And we saw him get a little run last season. 76 attempts, so it wasn't a lot. But
for him, it's a lot.
Yeah, for him, it is a lot. You're right, because he spent a lot of his career as a backup, mostly in New Orleans, Kansas City, briefly in Philadelphia, but he's bounced around. But three touchdowns, two picks, completed 70% of his passes, averaged a little under 7 yards per attempt. So, you know, he didn't completely crush them, but then again, their starter wasn't exactly crushing it with efficiency either, especially once he came back from with that injury. So, you know, he's fine as a backup, but, you know, I think it's a good system with Matt Nagy, but we have him top 10. I think that's about fair.
Yeah. Scheme wasn't asking a ton out of him. I think a lot of it was, you know, checkdowns and screens. And I think the biggest drop off we saw between him and Mitchell Trubisky was the running ability, where Mitchell Trubisky offered a lot as a runner. Chase Daniel really didn't offer anything with the running. And so they had to take that kind of out of the playbook. The guy who fumbled four times, threw a couple picks. You know, I think someone who didn't confirm that idea that, you know, he had been this sort of lurking possible starter all this time, that he, you know, on a different team could have been a starter. But I think we saw enough from him in the games that we thought, oh, they're going to be, they can survive with him at starting quarterback. And I think that's still going to be the case.
Especially a team that's so, you know, so heavy on defense, right? It's all about the D. It's just don't just manage the game.
Just don't screw up.
Right.
Is the Chase Daniel story. someone who did screw up quite frequently during his time in the past is Blake Bortles, who I have here. I don't want anyone to get hurt. I don't want Jared Goff to get hurt. I would be fascinated to see a half season of Blake Bortles in this offense. What do you think he would do?
Well, listen, remember 2015? I mean, Blake Bortles is on a very short list of players who threw 35 touchdowns in their second NFL season. He's on that list with a guy like Patrick Mahomes. Yep. I mean, they're two of, I think, five guys that have ever done that. Right. So don't forget, we've seen flashes from this guy. He throws a lot of interceptions, and he's really had struggles in over the past few seasons. But I'm with you, and I think I tweeted pretty much that same thing when he signed with the Rams. I would love to see – I think I kind of joked that – Blake Bortles is going to win the MVP, you know, because when Jared Goff goes down with an injury, Sean McVay's going to, that's McVay's next big achievement.
That would be incredible.
Is turning Bortles into a league MVP. So, I'm with you. It's more fascination than anything. It's an incredible system that McVay's been running over the past few years, even his last season in Washington, that they were tremendous at generating scoring opportunities. But, it's really that simple. And again, he's been up and down, but at time he's been a competent NFL starter, and this is, he's going from a bad situation in Jacksonville that had a shaky O-line, not good weapons, to a run heavy at times, to a tremendous system here with the Rams with Sean McVay. So I'm excited, and I'm with you. It's the same thing. You don't want Goff to get hurt, but you want to see Bortles in this offense just to see what he can do.
It'll be fascinating. And I mean, a guy who offers a high floor based on his running ability in terms of fantasy and in terms of real life football, right? He adds value at that. As a scrambler, and I say someone who can, you know, undesigned runs, but also, I mean, I'm not trying to make the quarterback wins argument, but a guy who, we talk about don't screw it up, a guy who played well enough during the postseason in 2017 to come within one quarter of making it to the Super Bowl.
Right. And yeah, the situation was good, right? And he held on.
Right. He was in a great situation, but like the running game was not great. It wasn't like he had a dominant rushing attack. It was just great defense, and he, you know, had some stretches where he looked like a legitimate NFL quarterback in that year. So we're not that far removed from that. I think certainly the Rams are a very advantageous situation for him. But yeah, I think it's, again, don't want to see anyone get hurt, but a really fascinating opportunity. We have six left. So do you want to go with your sixth?
Yeah, six for me is Brissett, who we talked about before. Jacoby Brissett, he's Andrew Luck's backup. We saw him in 2017, 17 touchdowns total, 7 interceptions, added value with his legs. Efficiency throwing the ball was not very good. Remember that offense, you know, we felt we were kind of like pleasantly surprised after they got him from New England, and he held down the fort for that entire season. He played almost every snap for the Colts offense. But, you know, it was kind of, he had a low bar and he went over it. They still really cannot score touchdowns, right? They really, really had a hard time finding the end zone, and he had problems himself. So I think it is a good backup situation for sure, but you know, I don't want to go, I don't think he should be in the top three or anything in this conversation.
Do you think the Colts should have considered or been more aggressive about trying to trade him during this offseason?
Absolutely. He's going to be a free agent after this year. I thought he was a very logical player to trade and then maybe signed a veteran holdover. But yeah, if they could have got a third round pick or something for him, and I know they, again, I know they were asking a lot, but if they could have got a mid round pick, I would have jumped on that opportunity.
Yeah, I think you'd have to have a plan to replace him. Mm-hmm. But if you had a plan, like if you could line up someone to sign to replace him, I think I'd make that move.
Yeah, no doubt.
A guy who was sacked a ton against behind a bad offensive line and who was extending plays. But I think someone who, you know, it's hard to say because like he was more impressive than we expected. But that guy still might not be all that exciting of a prospect. But I mean, you know, Andrew Luck, someone who was a year removed from having a bunch of injury issues. So. I mean, stranger things have happened than the Colts having to put in Jacoby Brissett for a stretch of games here or there during the 2019 season. I would go Brian Hoyer here.
Okay. I have him number two. We're both in the final five, so these are my five. I am at two.
I had Brissett number two. I actually think you might have talked me out of it. I think I'd move Brissett down now. Hoyer, I mean, someone who has been effective or at least competent in some bad places, Arizona, Cleveland, I think the stretch people remember from him the most would have been the year in Houston where he, you know, off and on had the starting job and he was competing with Ryan Mallett, eventually kind of took the reins, went on a quick winning streak a year. He threw 19 touchdowns, 7 picks, averaged 7.1 yards per attempt, but just was absolutely useless in a playoff loss to the Chiefs and kind of got run out of town after that. I think people remember that game. He was 15 of 34 for 136 with 4 picks. I don't think that's representative of his broader body of work, though.
No doubt. I mean, 48 touchdowns, 30 picks in his career. He's another guy pushing for 10,000 career passing yards. If he gets a little run in place of Brady this year, he might get there. I mean, I think the word for him is volatile, right? Yep. He's definitely going to look terrible, like you just mentioned at times, and other times he'll hit you with 3 or 4 touchdowns and win you a game. So, you know, I guess I may have cheated a little bit with him. I may have given him the Patriots bump a little in my rankings because we're thinking about what happens like 4 to 6 games if he's in there. And I think the system will, not to mention that they're run heavier that they've been in years past. I think that would help him kind of hold down the fort, just the genius of Belichick.
And I think the interesting thing to say here is look at someone like Nick Foles, where he came up, he was developed by Andy Reid and then by Chip Kelly and has had Doug Peterson. And he's had great coaches, but he's been able to basically play a significant portion of his career under those coaches and in very advantageous situations. When he was in a disadvantageous situation in Los Angeles, or in St. Louis, I should say, I think, he was terrible. Mm. With Brian Hoyer, it's almost the opposite, where he spent most of his career not playing for the guys who helped develop him in New England. I mean, Bill O'Brien was there in New England, but Bill O'Brien and Bill O'Brien with Bill Belichick, to me, are two different things, or Bill O'Brien with Josh McDaniels are two different things. I mean, he really, even though he's spent now, oh, this is going to be his sixth season as a member of the Patriots, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, he's only thrown 51 passes for the Patriots. So it's not like he's had a real opportunity to, you know, show off what he can do in a very advantageous spot for him. So I do think he probably deserves more credit in that Patriots bump than, you know, maybe we might be thinking about given his production elsewhere.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm with you there. So, all right, so yeah, I have him two. You have him, what, seven or something?
Yep,
or,
I have him six.
Okay, so we're pretty close nonetheless.
Oh, seven, I think, you're right.
Who am I up?
Yep, you're
up. You did Hoyer. All right, next I have Miami.
Yep,
so I don't know who it's going to be. It sounds like Ryan Fitzpatrick is leading, but I think they want Josh Rosen to win that job. But either way, I think this is a round where the backup's going to fit. You know, Fitzpatrick, as backups go, I think is a good one. Number one in yards per completion and yards per attempt last season, I think. Let's be hip here. Hashtag YOLO is the way to describe Fitzpatrick, right? He's just going to chuck it deep. He's going to get picked off 12 times in 8 games last season, but he'll make big plays as well. So that can have some value in this offense with some playmakers like Kenny Stills and Jakeem Grant, Albert Wilson, perhaps Devontae Parker, Mike Gesicki. We'll see. Kenyon Drake out of the backfield, of course. Not Kalen Ballage.
I've heard that's a thing.
yeah. My good buddy Matthew Berry is a big Ballage fan. I am not. but nonetheless, that's a story for another day. But and then that's Fitzpatrick, and then Rosen. Of course, that's more projection. You know, first round pedigree, bad situation last year. Goes to Miami. Hopefully, again, it's hard to say it's a better situation considering the state of their roster. It is just different, right?
What would you? How much does what you saw from Josh Rosen in year one, given the offensive line, given the players around him, given the changes of coaching, how much of what you saw changes your perception of him coming out of school?
I wasn't super high on him. Mm-hmm. So I think he was around quarterback 5 on my board, something like that. So that's going to mean what, a mid round pick in this day and age, maybe a third rounder. So,
makes sense.
I wasn't super pumped for him. So I'm about the same. I'm not going to crush him too much, plainly because look at league history. How many quarterbacks have we seen be brutal as rookies and then take a huge step forward in their second or third season?
Right.
Jared Goff being an example. Obviously, Peyton Manning threw a ton of interceptions in his first season. We've seen it over and over again. These guys take a second-year leap. So I'm not going to knock him a lot. It's all about kind of confidence levels, right? I think there's still, you know, like at Drew Stanton, it's really low that he's going to be good. Where Josh Rosen, you have a larger confidence interval that he may be a decent or very good NFL quarterback.
100%. So. Absolutely.
Yeah.
3 to go. I'm going to go Ryan Tannehill here.
That's where I am, too. Number 4 on my board.
Yeah. Yep, I have him 4 as well. A guy who I think we know what he is at this point. He struggles to stay healthy. He is he was mobile in years past. Someone who, is it fair to say he's the Lamar Miller of quarterbacks?
That's a good comp. Yeah, same conference too now.
Same conference for both former Dolphins now. A quarterback who I just think does not move the needle. Is not exciting. Will make plays. Has had some absolutely incredible plays during his time with the Dolphins, but someone who looks a lot better as your backup than does as your starter.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I think he's probably better than he gets credit for. Mm-hmm. Above average yards per attempt and completion percentage each of the past 4 seasons.
Yep.
Above his expected yards per attempt and completion percentage, I should say. What you're looking at there is, you know, the location of throws and, you know, how complicated they are. He's actually beat those each of the past 4 seasons. 16 touchdowns, 9 interceptions last season. They were kind of in the rebuild mold. You know, we criticize teams for overpaying mediocre quarterbacks, and they decided not to keep him around, to move on, to find the next guy. During this obvious rebuild for them. So credit for that, I guess.
Yeah.
There's something to be said for that. Obviously not the long-term answer, but I think he is a very good backup quarterback. And finally, Tennessee is a decent option if something happens to Marcus Mariota.
Well, if is
if,
a...
yeah.
I mean, there's a chance that they could have to go to their third-string quarterback at some point during this year, more so than most other teams. It's Logan Woodside is their third-stringer out of Toledo. But you know, I mean, it just we know that these guys are going to struggle to stay healthy.
Yeah.
It's a bummer, but that's just the reality of what their situation is at this point.
Yeah, I would say this in Mariota's defense. I mean, he's missed games every season of his career, but he's played 15, 15, and 14
right.
in the past 3 seasons, so... you know, he's right there. You know, if he could just get, you know, make it in there one more game or just stay, you know, avoid one hit here or there, he might be able to get through a full season. Mm-hmm. So he's close. It's not like he's missing 8, you know, 10 games a season. He's very close to playing out the season.
That's very fair. And I mean, it's not that he's going to miss a huge chunk of time, just that it's going to be, you know, it's going to happen. And there's going to be a couple games where he's, you know, like last year he was playing through the nerve injury.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were stretches where he was not 100%. And he's a tough guy. It's not as if he's not a tough player. It's just that it's, you know, whatever, for whatever reason, whether it's his body, whether it's the way he plays, there's just something about Marcus Mariota that puts him in the line of fire and you know, ends up with him less than 100% for long stretches of the season.
Yeah, isn't it interesting? You remember that draft class, Mariota and Jameis Winston, that they both have 4 seasons under their belt, and I still don't think we have the feel for them, right? We still just don't know for different reasons, too. It's unbelievable.
I think after each season, I've been like, okay, after this year, we're finally going to figure out what we know about Mariota and Winston.
And that's what we're saying this year, because it's the contract.
And we're saying it this year.
Yeah.
And I feel like they're going to, like, switch teams.
Yeah.
Next season, we're going to have the same questions about them next year.
Yeah.
Down to the final 2.
All right. I'll go first, so you can have number 1, okay? It's New Orleans and San Francisco. I'm going to go with the Niners. I'm going to go with the Niners here. Nick Mullins and C.J. Beathard, you know, mostly focusing on Mullins here, because he was pretty impressive last season. And again, I don't know if it's him or if it's Kyle Shanahan, but I pulled this interesting nugget, tweeted this a while back. If you look at yards per attempt for all quarterbacks over the past 2 seasons, all qualified quarterbacks, 2 49ers are in the top 5. Jimmy Garoppolo is number 2. Nick Mullins is number 4. And in fact, it's uncanny how close the stats are between Garoppolo and Mullins. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is unbelievable in terms of attempts, completions. I mean, you see Garoppolo go downfield a little bit more, but he gets picked off more. I mean, it's unreal how close their stats are, and makes you wonder if A, how good is Garoppolo is? Is he actually going to be a difference maker that Mullins wasn't? Or is Kyle Shanahan just a really darn good offensive playmaker? And maybe both come true. We'll have to see.
Right. It seems like they're not mutually exclusive. Like, yeah, right. We figure both. And I think it's, you can take it as a positive or a negative. I mean, if you want to take it as a negative, it's okay, well, they're not going to get that big leap we might be expecting from Garoppolo this year because they already had a pretty high ceiling with Mullins in there. Their offense was not bad with, I think they were 32nd in rushing DVOA last year. And, you know, Mullins still managed to do a pretty decent job. But then at the same time, it's okay, well, even if Garoppolo gets hurt, you're still in pretty good shape with Nick Mullins. I don't even think C.J. Beathard was terrible. Like, he was, I think Mullins was better, but C.J. Beathard, like, for a number three quarterback, if we were doing number three quarterback rankings, which is a perhaps a little bit of an obsessive
That's during
podcast.
The strike, Bill. When, during the strike, we will do that.
Okay. I mean, like, you know, he posted an 81.8 passer rating on 169 attempts, eight touchdowns, seven picks, not ideal, but, you know, someone who was okay. You know, I think it's Kyle Shanahan's really good, and I think there are some pretty promising quarterbacks here.
Yeah, and, you know, there's chatter about Mullins being a trade piece for them in the offseason. I actually thought Beathard was the guy that could fetch a late round pick.
You figure.
I thought that's what they would do. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, again, they still struggled to win games and they were near the basement of the league. So you just have to put in scoring as well. So you have to kind of put this in perspective. You know, we're talking about backups here, but you know, again, as backups go, I do think Mullins can be a pretty good one and maybe at some point get a shot to start.
Yeah, I think absolutely. If Teddy Bridgewater, I'm getting to in a second. If Jimmy Garoppolo, you know, doesn't stay healthy this year, if Nick Mullins plays well in his absence, they can get out of Jimmy Garoppolo's contract after this year. It would be, you know, very, very sudden change of events. But, I mean, it's not necessarily the strangest thing that has ever happened in terms of quarterback decisions.
Yeah, no doubt. And Mullins, this will be his third season, so he's still under team control through for another year, for the next two seasons, including 2019.
Absolutely. So I kind of spoiled it a bit, but number one is our old friend Teddy Bridgewater of the New Orleans Saints, where I think played at the highest level outside of maybe Case Keenum of any of these quarterbacks that I can think of at the pro level when he played in 2015, a guy who led the Vikings. Well, certainly helped by the defense, but led the Vikings to the playoffs with a less impressive regimen of offensive weapons than it might have seemed in the years to come since then. Adam Thielen's obviously broken out since then. Stephon Diggs is playing better since then as well. An offense that was, you know, built around Adrian Peterson at the time. So, not necessarily quite the same as what we saw from the Vikings in years since. To be fair, it's been now, really, this will be almost three full years, almost four full years, since Teddy Bridgewater has played regularly at the NFL level. He had that one start for the Saints last year in week 17. He was pretty ineffective. I mean, 118 yards and 23 pass attempts. I remember him playing very well. I don't think he had a ton of help. That was a Saints team that had nothing to play for. I don't know that it's necessarily the best thing to judge him based on that one game. But I think a spot where, you know, if Drew Brees does struggle and the Saints do need to make a change, which would be shocking, but really not much more shocking than the Broncos benching Peyton Manning for Brock Osweiler several years ago in the final year of his career. I mean, I think the Saints are going to be well positioned to have a very high floor backup in Teddy Bridgewater.
Yeah, and I think they probably want to get him some run this season, ideally when they're blowing teams away and they can get a look at him because, I mean, if I think the Saints are my pick to win the Super Bowl this year, and if they get that done, I think Breeze retires. In fact, I just made that prediction in a roundtable we did at ESPN ESPN Plus the other day. So they want to know if this guy's the future. I mean, he could have went to Miami, and he'd be the favorite to start right now. He decided not to accept that deal and re-signed as a backup for New Orleans, and probably because he knows he's going to have a shot to be the starter in the Sean Payton offense. So. You're right, 25 pass attempts the past three seasons, but he showed some flashes his first 2 years. And remember, I mean, I know his numbers aren't great his first 2 years. I know he was up and down. He was very, very conservative. But the hype going into that third season was palpable across the league. I mean, there was legit excitement that they were going to make a Super Bowl run. And it was devastating when he got hurt, not just for Vikings fans, everywhere. I mean, we were all pumped to see him in that offense because we thought he was going to make a huge leap and that team was going to be very good. So, it's good that he's healthy. He's back in the league. And, you know, again, he hasn't played enough for us maybe to justify ranking him one, but, the upside here is massive, especially in this offense. So I think there's, some legitimacy to it.
Yeah. I mean, he could be a legitimate number one quarterback and certainly I don't know that he could be like a top 10 NFL starter, but I think certainly like a top 15, top 16 NFL starter would hardly be out of the question given how promising he looked with a limited offense in 2015, but there's no perfect backup quarterback here. It's all relative. It's all just a different variety of options. But I'm happy we agreed. I feel better about it. I would have, if you had picked like Trevor Siemian first, it would have been like, yeah, Trevor Simeon's great.
Now, we were pretty close. I wonder what the standard deviation is on these picks. I mean, it had to be like 3 or something. Right. We were really close.
So. Right. And I wonder, I mean, I think if you polled fans, I think Teddy Bridgewater would be number one, but agreed. I feel like you could, make a case for Mullins, maybe Tannehill. I think it's probably within those three. I don't think Brissett would make it. Maybe Case Keenum, if you consider Case Keenum a backup. But I think you're looking at that those three or four guys as sort of the, your number one picks.
Agreed. Yep. Yeah. I think maybe someone would go Hoyer with New England and Fitz or Rosen. But I think you're right. I think that first tier is not hard to pick out.
Right. Well, Mike, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Where can people check out more of the work you do?
Daily Wager, we're going through player props. We're doing a lot of this talking through player projections for the 2019 season. That's been a lot of fun. So we're working through those, and we'll be busy on that show throughout the rest of the calendar year. Mike Clay NFL on Twitter, obviously a lot of stuff over at ESPN Plus. We'll have a lot of NFL and fantasy content coming out. So, it's time. Vacation's in the rearview mirror, Bill. It's, time for some football.
And you're on a podcast occasionally.
I am on the Fantasy
little,
Focus
little tiny podcast.
I am. Yeah, I've heard of it. Yeah, I'm on that once in a while. Matthew Berry, Field Yates, Fania Bell, Daniel Dopp do a great job, and I fill in once in a while where I can. We're going to do some live shows coming up. We have one coming up in Detroit, so we've been tweeting about it. Make sure you get your tickets and come out and hang out. To me, my first one, my first live show. I know you've done them, so I don't know what to expect, but maybe off the air, you'll have to give me some tips.
Throngs of fans.
Throngs.
Maybe for Focus, maybe not for my show, but at least for Focus, a popular show, a lot more. But yeah, no, obviously a really cool experience, and you do great work in all those places, Mike, and it's always a pleasure to have you on. We'll have you back on as the season starts very shortly. Very scary to say, but it's football's coming.
It is. It's coming fast. Thanks a lot, Bill.
All right. Thanks so much to my guest today, ESPN's Mike Clay, talking about the minutia of the NFL with someone who I feel like is not only very fun doing it, but also someone who was extremely qualified. As someone who looks into this stuff on a regular basis, Mike is such an expert on these matters that it's great to have someone on who deals with the bottom of NFL rosters more than I do. So hope you guys enjoyed it. We have more NFL content coming in the weeks to come as we begin to preview the 2019 NFL season. More written content coming from me on ESPN.com and more audio coming here on the Bill Barnwell Show.